On Rosh Hashanah, we have two major themes. We have the mitzvah of blowing shofar. That's a biblical mitzvah. V'areotem, you have to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Shofar, technically, from the Torah's perspective, is tkia, a long blast. Teruah, we'll discuss what that word means. Some kind of choppy blast. And then tkia, a long blast. It says three times you will blow. So you need to do that three times. So technically on Rosh Hashanah, what do we need to do? We need to do two, a long blast. Teruah, we'll define what that word means. And again, a tkia. Three times. That's my biblical mitzvah. In the course of Jewish history, it became questionable as to what the teruah is. Is it three short blasts, like when a person starts crying? Okay, you start crying, that's what we call shivarim. Or is it the weeping that's... okay, let me try to do it more of a weeping sound. Give me a second. Give me a second. Right? So that's the sound of a weeping, right? When people weep, that it begins with shorter, it begins with longer sounds, and then it evolves into the weeping that's a short sound. So Chazal had two opinions, whether you should do a shivarim, which is basically three blasts like that, or teruah, which we have different traditions on how to do each of those. So we a teruah is 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 nine blasts, 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 2 there was an opinion that said that maybe we're supposed to show the whole of the weeping, that the weeping begins with the tu, the shvarim, and evolves into tu, into the cherulah. So we do all, three opinions, right? So we do, that's how we end up with 30 sounds, because we have tkia, that's one, shivarim teruah, that's another two, and then tkia, that's four. We do that three times, that's 12. We said, really, I need three, but I'm not sure of which set. I need tkia, shvarim tkia, that's three sounds, times three, that's another nine. And then tkia, teruah tkia, again three times, that's another nine, 18 and 12 equals 30. So really, I need to hear 30 blasts on Rosh Hashanah. Now, you guys in advanced class, we can deal with a little bit more depth. So, on the shvarim, there are three opinions of how you should do a shvarim. We generally do a shvarim, two, that's our shvarim. But there are those that have the custom that they do utu, that's their shvarim. And then there are those that do two utu, that the shvarim is broken into three sounds. These are opinions that date back to the Rishonim, they're 800 years old, and there are different traditions, and they're all okay, they're all kosher. Saying that, so whichever shul you attend, we'll do one of those three. Again, either three broken blasts, two, or utu, or two utu. You'll hear that those three types of shvarim. Then you have in the teruah two traditions. One is the classical one, which is what you hear in most shuls, Ashkenazim and Sephardim, and that goes like this: tu 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 tu, yeah, tu 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 tu, tu 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 tu, nine minimum. They always do more; they do 12, 15, because there's no maximum, but the minimum is nine. But the Yemenites and the Yekis and the Germanic Jews have a different tradition as to how to do the teruah, and it goes like this. Whereas the regular teruah you do with your tongue, tu 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 tu, the Yekis and the Yemenites do their teruah, where it really sounds more like weeping, they do it with their breath. The breakup is far less pronounced. So that's two traditions again on how we do a trua. And again, everything's kosher. Whichever shul you attend, that's what you'll hear. Ideally, you should hear whatever your tradition is. So that's what we have. Do we want to go into the technical details of the length, or we'll leave that? Yes, guys, are you interested in going into the length of what each one has to be, or we move forward? No, not interested. Okay, whatever. Why shouldn't you know it? My 7-year-old's going to know it. In a nutshell, we have a concept called trumitin, which basically means a decibel or a syllable, a slight sound. So we measure the length of a tkiya, or a trua, or a shvarim by trumitin, meaning 9. When we make a trua, it's, guys, can you time me? You ready? 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. How long was that? I did 9. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. That was 9. Oh, so 9 takes a little under 2 seconds. Our tkia has to be as long as our trua. So if our trua, 9 short blasts, takes 2 seconds, how long does our tkia really have to be? 2 seconds, somewhere between 2 and 3 seconds. But we do longer than that. You'll hear the tokei here doing 7 seconds, 9 seconds, but he doesn't have to. Technically, the tkiya has to be as long as the trua. But when you do shvarim and trua, so your shvarim is 2, 2, 2, that takes your 9 trumitin, and another 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, that's another 9. So there your tkiya has to be longer, twice as long, 4 seconds, 3.5 seconds. Again, all the tkiyos you'll hear over here and in any shul are much longer than that. But technically, that's what you need to do. A tkiya has to be that long, shvarim, and then trua. Okay, so now we cover the laws of blowing shofar more or less. We have to have intent to listen to the tkiya, and our custom is that we blow 30 blasts before we start prayer, before musaf. We blow another 30 blasts in the prayer, and another 40 blasts after the prayer. So you end up with 100. For Kabbalistic reasons, that's what we do. So you're not supposed to talk from the time the one who blows shofar makes his blessings, 2 blessings on our behalf, the blessing on the mitzvah of hearing shofar and shechiyanu, until he finishes his 100 blasts, you're not supposed to talk. If you did talk, it doesn't disqualify what you did. But you're for sure not supposed to talk while he's blowing the shofar. I mean the whole period, from then till the end of davening, till he finished his 100th blast, we're not supposed to talk. If you did, it's still kosher. If you spoke during the blowing of the shofar, I think it's still kosher, but I would want to look it up again. I think it's still kosher, because you're able to hear it as you're talking. So I think it would still be kosher, but I would want to double check. Okay, so that's our blowing shofar in a nutshell. Those of you who would like to learn, I recommend take some time and learn it. It's not hard. I don't know how to do it, but it's not hard. You can do it. My son is learning it. I mean, the people who invest the time learn and they know how to do it. There's a lot to be said for which shofar you use. There are plenty of shofars being sold on the market that are not kosher. What makes a shofar not kosher? It has a hole. Ah, but when I buy it, I don't see a hole. That's right, because the distributors, they take cement that's used for tiles and for countertops, and they fill in the holes. So even if you immerse it in warm, soapy water, that won't dissolve. That's a very powerful cement. So then they sell it to you, and they say, it's a perfect shofar, don't you see? And the blotches, yeah, that's because it's natural. Oh, well, you won't know. So you have to buy from a good source. And a good shofar is easy to blow. A good shofar is not difficult. Again, buy from a reliable source, and if you need, I could give you names and numbers where it would be a good place to buy a shofar. Yes. I didn't hear you. Yes. Generally, the term shofar, according to one opinion, comes from the word shpoferet, which means a hollow tube. And most animals, if their shofar is going to be kosher, then they have the external, I don't know, what is that, cartilage? What's the shofar made out of? What's that called in English?
Cartilage, yeah.
What?
Same material as the nails.
I don't know the English word for it. In Hebrew, it's called etzim. Not etzim. You have the shofar, and in it, you have an etzim. You have a bone inside. And basically, you have to either drill out the bone, or the Yemenites used to bury it. Right. So that's... Right, you could also cook it out. Three different methods.
Cooking destroys the house.
It's messy.
How do you guys know?
It stinks.
What?
I tried it.
Where?
In Holland. You can get horns from rams. You can buy them from sheep birds. And then try to cook it. And try it several methods. Bury it in the ground for 3 months and then cook it and it's empty. Yes. There are also holes. And
the holes are from what? From the worms?
No, the material is not consistent. So in the end, there are holes in the worms, so it's not good. And you can cook it, and that's a very stinking business because it really stinks. And you can get it out, but the outside gets also. Destroys the outside. You try things. It costs not much in Holland. When you know the sheep herds, ask them. There are about 20 shekels apiece. So you can try what you want.
Wow. Okay. Okay. But we want a ram's horn.
A ram's horn.
Yeah, you get that too?
This size.
No, so we want a bigger one.
Those sheep or ram, we don't have enough.
You don't have enough. Okay.
So how are they removed? Do you make it kosher so far?
Everyone keeps it a secret. The Ashkenazim used to cook it and straighten it out. That's why an Ashkenazi shofar has that straight part, because the Ashkenazim would cook it, straighten it, and then you could put a drill through it, because it's straight. That's Ashkenazi shofar. And the Yemenites left it natural and round, and they would bury it, like you said. And yeah.